Hi, I'm David Crowe. Thanks for tuning in to episode 107 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. You can email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com. That's Crowe with an E. You can join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth or follow us on Twitter at infectiousmyth. Listen every Tuesday at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on prn.fm or download us after broadcast on iTunes or other podcast programs. And remember that I don't know your listener until I hear from you. If you send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show and including your email, your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift. If you would like to sponsor the show as an individual or as an advertiser, please contact me. We appreciate all our listeners, but if you want this show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information that you are gleaning, for the support you get for some non-mainstream ideas, and the challenges you get to others. So today we are going to talk about the origins of HIV, AIDS, and Ebola. So let's get to our guest. Joel Savage is a freelance journalist, author, and writer on a variety of subjects. He was born at Cape Coast in the central region of Ghana on January 1957. He is the son of a journalist and documentary film producer. Joel studied journalism at the Ghana Institute of Journalism in Accra. He currently lives in Antwerp, Belgium, and writes for both local and international newspapers. He's published 8 books and is currently working on a new book and a movie script concerning AIDS and Ebola, which we'll discuss today. Welcome to the show, Joel.
Thank you, David, for inviting me onto the show.
Yeah, so I was contacted by a microsurgeon named Joanne Van Dongen, who said that he was the head of the Department of Microsurgery at the University of Maastricht from 1976 to 1993, and a lecturer on experimental microsurgery at Utrecht University between 1989 and 1997. And then he got into some trouble related to some of the things he saw that he thought were unethical. So can you describe a little bit about him, who unfortunately can't join us today, and what the experiences were that got him into trouble?
In fact, Johan is somebody I've never even met before.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, when I was writing, every time, there are so many people who are interested in my articles because of the way I write. They see that my writing is quite different from the way journalists write or other journalists write. But I see myself as an African writer, so every time I know that my writings won't be exactly like an European or an American writer. So unknowing, Johan van Dongen is on LinkedIn social platform, and every time he has been reading my articles about Belgium involving so many crimes, and yet they were able to build a statue for a king, Leopold II, for a king who killed over 10 million Africans, including women and children. So all the time he has been reading. So he saw that this is the man I can work with. This is a brave writer. I've never read such a thing. So he contacted me. In fact, I was sure that he has been reading all my articles. So he said, Joel, you know, I think I can work with you. A couple of years ago, I am the one who wrote AIDS and Ebola, a medical crime, because I wrote it in Netherlands. And my government were angry with me for writing it because they thought it is something that I have to keep it secretly. So I lost my job as a lecturer at the university. Then he said, Joel, you know something?
So are you talking about Joel now, or are you talking...
Yes, I'm talking about Johan.
You're talking in the first person. So you said, I lost my job, and I was thinking that you lost your job, but you're talking about Joel.
Yes. He was telling me because of the book he wrote, he lost his job as a lecturer at the University of Maastricht. So he said, Joel, well, if that would be the case, then please, can we write the English version of the books? Because I still want the world to know that AIDS and Ebola were indeed medical crimes, and I don't want to go into my grave with such a crime.
We'll get to that, but perhaps you can, for background of people who don't know too much about the history of Belgium and its colonial history. I mean, today Belgium seems like a little country without a great deal of political power. It's famous for its beer and chocolate and moule frites, but it's got kind of a dark history with colonialism. In Zaire, were there other colonies of Belgium?
Yes, Belgium colonized Rwanda as well.
Oh, okay.
As you said, it's a country that, even though it's very small, but the crime they committed in Africa is so enormous that people can't believe such a small country can commit such crime. Even the Rwandan genocide, Belgium were responsible for that. But one thing which surprises me most is, David, I don't know why their journalists can't even write and say, look, these are things which our country did, and yet we are not doing anything about that, but rather we are doing the wrong thing. For example, I'll give you an example, David.
Mm-hmm.
The recent attacks in Belgium,
yes,
that is in Zaventem,
right.
Belgium were initially warned about that coming attacks.
So these were the terrorist attacks at the airport and other places in the capital of Belgium. Yeah.
Yes, they were warned. But being in this country for 16 years, what I have observed about Belgium as a country is they are a country that underestimates everyone.
Okay, so they didn't take it too seriously when somebody said
they could. Thank you very much. Instead of them to do something, they always underestimate people, especially from third world countries. And now innocent people are dead.
Yes.
Let me give you another example. During the time of Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Laden warned that he's coming to invade Belgium. Could you believe one of the Belgian generals wrote, we shouldn't worry about this man. He can't even find Belgium on the map, on the world map, because Belgium is so small. You know, they are a country that's underestimate everyone. And this is the reason why things are not going well in this country. But the holy thing is, their journalists can't write, because I don't know whether they are scared. Because if, excuse me to say, if there's no statue of Adolf Hitler for killing 6 million Jews, why should there be a statue of a king who killed over 10 million people, including women and children?
Well, that's actually a really good question, and it seems like the Europeans are not really over colonialism, because you're quite right. If King Leopold had killed Europeans, they would have taken down all his statues, and yet because he killed Africans, even today, I guess Belgium has not come to terms. Yet, I mean, Belgians know that they had a brutal colonial regime in Zaire. Like, it's not completely hidden from the Belgian population.
Yeah, the whole thing is during the scramble of Africa, Belgium took Congo as its personal property, and all the richness in this country were all taken from Africa. So they weren't expecting to lose Congo very soon. In fact, up till now, Belgium, Congo gained independence since 1960. But
right.
You can't believe that up till now, Belgium hasn't recovered yet from losing Congo. So, in fact, they think the best punishment for the Congolese is, first of all, to kill Patrice Lumumba, because he was the first elected government president of Congo.
Right.
So they got him. And also, they weren't satisfied. They were responsible for the first Ebola outbreak in Congo. According to Johan's research, it was Belgium went through Hilary Kaprowski that they went to Congo to give the children polio vaccine, unknowing they have contaminated the vaccine, which resulted in HIV virus leading to AIDS.
I personally have some issues with these theories, but okay, so Kaprowski was giving a polio vaccine, which people claim was contaminated with SV...
Contaminated, yes, according to him.
SV40.
Yes.
So by injecting the polio vaccine...
No. It was sprayed into their mouth.
Oh, it was an oral polio vaccine. Yes. Okay, sorry.
Sprayed into their mouth, yeah.
Okay, so how did they determine that SV40 was in this vaccine?
Thank you. That's a very good question, David. I'll read something to you. During a medical conference on June 13, 1978, according to Professor Johan Doggan, he was there when the medical conference was taking place. And one of the participants, the name is Professor Dr. H.H. Colon. He is the physician and bacteriologist working at a place in the Netherlands.
Okay.
Okay, the man confessed that a safety and director of National Institute of Public Health, I am responsible for the manufacture of dangerous vaccines, and he admitted that certain components were added before they were released. So, Johan was there and he recorded everything. But prior to that, Johan wasn't surprised because he has already discovered some documents at a library of which he has, the book revealed all the medical crimes, including the contaminated vaccines. So the Dutch government weren't expecting him to write or to use those hidden secrets as a book. This is where they got angry with him.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so he wrote a book, and was he claiming that Ebola or HIV was...
Yes.
I mean, that was pre-HIV in the 1970s,
yes.
Right?
When he went to the library and discovered that there were secret documents that Ebola and AIDS were manufactured as bioweapons, as a means to depopulate, he was shocked. But then, while he was studying, they did certain experiments of which he detected that, oh, okay, this thing, it is something which were manufactured.
Johan has told me through email a number of seemingly contradictory things.
Yes.
Like, he's told me that HIV and Ebola viruses do not exist. He's said that cytomegalovirus is the cause of at least AIDS. He said, as you just said, that HIV and Ebola were man-made laboratory weapons. He said that there are thousands of viruses that can cause AIDS and Ebola. And he said that toxins activate latent retroviruses in our bodies. So I'm just trying to get an understanding of what he really means and what you with him really mean about HIV and Ebola, the diseases, and what's the true cause of them, and how governments like the Belgian and Dutch governments are involved with this.
I will summarize something for you to understand everything, David.
Mm.
You remember, slavery has ended, and Africa and African Americans are now free. But yet, it came to a time Europe and America are a little bit scared because they don't know whether Africa will rise up against them for them to pay for the crimes they committed. Okay, another thing. Almost Europe has lost all its colonies in Africa through
right.
independence.
Mm-hmm.
They were also scared Africa will rise against them. And finally, apartheid also ended in South Africa. So they thought, or they think the best way to make them impotent is to apply a medical crime on them. And if you read Johan's book and research, David, you will understand it accurately that it is true, they did it. For example, I'll give you one example, David.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, America had wanted to kill Gaddafi because of his involvement in the Panam, over Lockerbie, the explosion.
Oh, right. The explosion of the Panam plane over Lockerbie, Scotland, which most people believe was funded
by... Yes, Libya was involved.
Mm-hmm.
Gaddafi was the one who orchestrated everything.
Yeah.
So when they wanted to kill him, unfortunately, he survived it.
I remember there was at least one attempt on his life, and they ended up killing civilians instead. Yeah.
But then America knew and that if they were to, or if Europeans are to go to look for a job as doctors or nurses in Libya, Gaddafi will know it. So American used Eastern European countries, very poor countries, so that they will go to Libya and look for a job. And they all got admission as doctors and nurses there. It was within February to August they detected that all the children are being infected.
Okay, so there was a big court case, and a bunch of mostly Bulgarian nurses were convicted to death for infecting. Okay, so we're going to have to talk about this.
So now, David, let me ask you a question. So just imagine doctors, nurses, who are well qualified, can't even know that the blood they were giving to the children were contaminated with.
I have a problem here because I don't believe that the HIV test is accurate. And I think that if you inject foreign blood into people, the immune reaction can cause a positive HIV test without HIV being present. Yeah. So I never bought the theory that these people had deliberately or had been duped into infecting Libyan children with HIV. I believe that it was just whatever medical procedures were going on, perhaps blood transfusions were causing this. And I think the proof is that there's never been an outbreak of AIDS in Libya. There were these 50 children who became HIV positive, but surely it would have escaped out of this group and would have caused an epidemic, which it didn't do.
Okay, David, what do you think about this? On October 13, 1994, the Belgium scientist Guido van der Groen claimed that Ebola was invented in 1960s in Fort Detrick. But he has forgotten that the date that I mentioned, he has already made an interview to Humo magazine, one of Belgium's leading magazines, that U.S. military laboratories slated for Ebola and HIV to develop a biological weapon in the early 60s. Why did he say that? Why did he make such an interview? Then later, when he saw that he has made a wrong statement, he has to lie. And that lie was just 2 years ago. So, David, how can you, just comment on this. Let me hear.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Okay, so what I know about Ebola is that the first outbreak was in the mid-1970s. Yeah. And it was characterized by uncontrolled bleeding from every orifice of the body, even the eyes. And so it was a truly horrible disease. And there were three papers published in, I think, Lancet, which claimed to have discovered a new virus, which was the cause for this. Yeah. And the three papers are some of the worst science I've ever read. One of the papers took one sample from one patient, claimed to discover a virus, and then claimed that they'd found the cause of all cases of Ebola, even though they'd only analyzed one person. There were some very fuzzy pictures that they claimed were a filovirus, a kind of a string-like virus particle. And since then, Ebola has morphed into a much more mild condition, and in recent epidemics, most people with so-called Ebola are not even bleeding. They have basically a serious fever and loss of weight and things like that.
David, I want to relate to three issues here so that you also comment on it, because I really like the way you are bringing my knowledge to this. You remember before, after Belgium lost the colony of Congo, then the first outbreak of Ebola took place. Okay, that's number one. Number two, you know, Holland knew they are going to lose South Africa. So why then that Nelson Mandela inherited a country fully infested with AIDS virus.
Well, okay,
that's
so...
Number three.
Yeah, okay, keep going.
Zimbabwe gained its independence in 1980. Why is it that just after Mugabe taking place, almost about 70% of all the Zimbabweans are infected with HIV? Can you please say the comment on this?
Yeah,
because
well,
this is something which Johan is proving that they were intentionally administered on the people.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is really interesting. Okay, so I think what I think I agree with Johan on some things, but where I disagree is I don't believe that you can do an antibody test and claim that you've detected a virus, and I also believe that the fact that the HIV test was initially developed in North America on sick people, and then when they went to Africa and they started using the test, they started finding it was positive in a large number of people, and. One of the reasons why I don't believe that this test is detecting a virus is because in Africa, more women than men test positive, and yet, as everywhere, African men, like men everywhere, are more promiscuous than women. So if it's sexually transmitted, it should be a significant majority of men who have HIV. In addition, prostitutes around the world who are women who have the most sex of anybody in the world, sometimes, hundreds of partners in a week, prostitutes have never been a risk factor for HIV. So I think that people in Africa would probably have tested HIV positive 100 years ago just because there's something in the genetic makeup of black-skinned people that reacts on the test. Or perhaps it's because in Africa, living in poverty, living with more other tropical diseases, they have a more activated immune system. But I don't believe that AIDS is a problem in Africa.
You said something interesting here. You said 100 years ago. Yeah, you are right. You know, the reason why I say you're right, because according to Johan's research, Ebola virus is something they have already invented it a century ago, which was already used by Hitler to kill a lot of Jews, or even were tested. So, you see, so when you mention this, it has really make everything accurate. That, in fact, I'm beginning to reason with you, and I'm accepting your opinion.
Well, really. I think that, I mean, I'm not an expert on Africa, but there were horrible crimes committed during colonialism, and it's not like, a band played, they changed the flag, the country became independent, and things became better, because the Western countries still largely controlled those countries, and Western governments made sure that the leaders were cooperative. I mean, the president of Ghana was ousted by the CIA in the 50s or 60s.
Kwame Nkrumah, yes.
Yeah.
Kwame Nkrumah was ousted by the CIA, and the reason why they did that was because he helped Patrice Lumumba to gain independence from Congo.
Right.
So, yeah.
So there were some African leaders who really wanted independence, but the Europeans said, you can be nominally independent, but we want a leader who's going to still send the resources to Europe so that the European economy doesn't collapse, which is more important than the lives. And there have been many tests there have been many vaccine programs, and there's also been a lot of testing and of drugs and vaccines. And I think some of this may be causing the diseases, which the West wants to blame on infections, because then they can sell vaccines and then they can sell drugs. And it also boosts the budget of things like the World Health Organization, because there's this fear of this dirty, filthy continent that's going to infect Europe with all of these diseases. So it's a great way for these health organizations to boost their budget. I mean, can you talk about how drugs and vaccines are tested in Africa?
Well, according to Professor Johann, when drugs are manufactured, the easiest way to test is to test it on Africans, because they are easy. Africa is a country you can easily penetrate. Lack of security and everything, so everybody can easily commit a crime there. Okay, this what you have said so far will remind me of something of which I want you to know or to tell me your opinion. According to him, even people are blaming homosexuals as responsible
for AIDS, right?
For AIDS,
right? Because
according to Johann, homosexuals are not responsible. What happened was, in America, when the disease was invented in America, there were many vaccines which was also manufactured, of which they want to test to see how effective. And so there were so many prisoners that time, and among these prisoners were homosexuals. And they came to agreement with them if they will agree for early release by testing the vaccine on them. And they agreed. And a lot of them were released. But unknowing, they have bought their own debt, resulted in this HIV and AIDS issue.
I had heard that... I have a slightly different interpretation. I had heard that there was a hepatitis B vaccine program in the 1970s that was targeted at gay men. The gay community was told that they were at risk for hepatitis B. And so the government was doing them a service by testing the vaccine on them and protecting them from this. I believe what happened was that, or one of, it may have happened, is there's no proof of this. But, of course, a vaccine is designed to create antibodies. And so that may have been the reason why so many gay men tested positive, because they had been exposed to this experimental hepatitis B vaccine. But I think in the West, the ability, I don't think it's possible nowadays to do experiments on prisoners. That definitely was done, maybe even up to the 70s. But now it's possible to do testing on Africans, such as during the recent Ebola epidemic. Once the World Health Organization declared a public health emergency, it was possible to do vaccine testing without the normal ethical constraints, which of course meant that the vaccine manufacturing companies had the potential to make huge profits.
I'm very happy that you brought the issue of World Health Organization in this discussion. According to Johann, in Africa, there were varieties of wild experiments of dubious scientists vaccinating children with contaminated vaccines. For example, the World Health Organization can't deny that they are not aware from 1954 to 1957, Hillary injected over 1 million Africans with the varieties of AIDS and Ebola, deceiving them it was a vaccine for polio. And then between 1960 and 1973, tests were held on a major initiative of World Health Organization at a medical field research in the West Nile district. What do you say about that, please?
I think that vaccines can have a lot of adverse effects. And the way the medical system is programmed is if you give a vaccine and then people get sick, you claim that a new virus has come into the country. So you were mentioning the West Nile district. There was the West Nile virus that emerged supposedly in the 1930s. Obviously, there's Ebola and AIDS. All of these are believed to have been viruses that incubated in Africa. But at the same time, Africans were subject to massive vaccine programs. to try to eliminate polio, for example. And also, they were subject to increasing amounts of experimentation. And I imagine that if you went into Africa and hired a company to find people to test the vaccine on, and some of those people died and you wanted to hide the information, it'd be pretty easy to do that because it's so far away from Europe and America.
Yeah. Okay. You know, at the moment, I don't know how you feel about the research of Johan van Dorgan, but the way things went, I can gather certain information that the man is right. That is the reason why he suffered so much when he published his book exposing that AIDS and Ebola were medical crimes. Because, David, you are a journalist, or maybe you have even a profession higher than journalism. And what you do is you know exactly what you do because you are a professional. So I don't think somebody like Johan, who have said it so high, will come out and fabricate a story. But if you watch carefully, you see that there's something that is going on that is hit the media wouldn't let the public know. Why is it that they can't even tell the real origins of AIDS and Ebola? You see that the story is so complicated that they are trying to hide something. You see?
Yeah, so I agree.
That made me to think that Johan is right. But, your opinion is quite different from other people's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I'm very skeptical of the existence of these viruses, but it's not like I'm saying that, you know, these diseases are imaginary. I mean, I agree that there were people who died during the AIDS epidemic in America. There are people who've died of, quote, AIDS in Africa. There definitely were outbreaks of mysterious diseases like, I'm trying to think of the classification of Ebola, a disease characterized by the loss of blood and fluids. There are numerous of those diseases in Africa. The question is, what's the cause? The Western model is that good things come from the West and bad things come from Africa. So what you get from the West is you get vaccines and drugs, and you get people in spacesuits to help you when there's a crisis. And what comes from Africa? Well, yeah. HIV, Ebola, West Nile virus, you name these diseases. And so the white men are saving the Africans, whereas I think it's actually quite the opposite. You know, the white men, in order to make lots of money, come into Africa, test their compounds, find a huge market for new vaccines, and blame everything that happens on a virus, because if they blame it on mining companies, pollution from mining companies, if they blame it on the economy that's being constructed by their favorite dictators, then they're blaming themselves, and they will never do that.
Okay, what about this? There's a statement, 2004 Nobel Peace Prize winner Wangari Maathai said, according to her, some say that AIDS came from the monkeys. I doubt that because we have been living with monkeys since time immemorial. Mm-hmm. Others say it was a curse from God, but I say it cannot be. Black people are dying more than any other people in the planet. Maathai spoke at a press conference a day after winning the prize for the work in human rights. So, what do you say about that too? Why is it that it's killing only Africans more than any other population?
Well, I think that Africa's never really recovered from colonialism. I mean, as a child, I grew up in England, and I was taught that Africa was basically the dark continent, and the Europeans came to civilize Africa, and you know, the implication was that the Africans just didn't know how to run their own countries. But if you actually look at the history of Africa, there were some very sophisticated civilizations in Africa. If you look at artworks in European museums, there's some amazing art that came from Africa, which tells you that there were some very sophisticated and stable civilizations, because basically art arises out of stability. Because when you have a stable civilization, you have the excess money to pay artists, and you have the art surviving. Whereas if there's continuous war, then art just becomes something to sell, and it ends up getting broken or sold somewhere. So, you know, the Europeans basically covered up that when they invaded these countries, they destroyed civilizations in order to liquidate the natural resources. And you still have European companies in Africa mining, you know, many, many different compounds. There's plantation economies. And many Africans are living in shanty towns where they don't get a good diet because they don't have access to fresh food. So it seems like it's really an economic crime as much as anything.
Yeah. Okay, David, before Africa had the medicine of malaria, they were surviving on herbs and leaves and many
right.
other things. Yeah, but a lot of Africans didn't die in that way. Why now, after colonization, Africa has to die in such a large number?
Well, let me give you an example with AIDS. You know, tuberculosis is one of the AIDS-defining diseases. There's about 30 diseases. In Africa, the definition of AIDS is like fever, weight loss, persistent cough, persistent diarrhea. Those symptoms alone, without an HIV test, according to the Bangui definition of AIDS, can get you diagnosed. So let's say that you're working in a mine in South Africa, and in the mine there are obviously dust particles from the blasting and from the drilling that's going on, and a lot of the workers are coming down with lung diseases like tuberculosis. And I'm not sure that tuberculosis is even the cause of the disease. I think if your lungs get damaged, then they're going to get colonized by various pathogens. So now you have a choice. You could either blame the conditions in the mine and say that the mine owners should put in expensive ventilation systems, that the miners should have better protection, things like that. Or you could blame the tuberculosis on the miners' sexuality. And you could say it's not really tuberculosis, it's AIDS. And these miners got HIV because they're using prostitutes. Therefore, it's their fault, not our fault. I think that's the logic that's been going, that's happened in Africa 100 times. Whenever there's a Western or, you know, an economically produced problem, Western medicine says it's an infectious disease and it's not the fault of the economy.
In fact, David, in my opinion, I believe it and Ebola were indeed medical crimes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one example. Why is it that a country, we have already spoken about this, but still I have to make reference. If somebody responsible for killing over more than 10 million Africans, including women and children, the Belgians can erect a statue for him, then why people don't believe that they can be responsible for such a medical crime in Africa? Why? Okay, another point. At the moment, you know, Belgium, including the whole European Union, they are fighting against crime and terrorism.
Mm.
But yet, the same government who is fighting against crime is supporting crime. This is an article I published recently. Belgium is supporting crime. And I gave the reason why Belgium is supporting crime. So far as a statue of such a person is there, and they knew he committed such a crime, that means they are supporting a crime. So how can you support a crime and stand in a crime? Or in Africa, we say, how can you stand in a field of thorns while you are removing thorns from you under your feet. You can't.
So I didn't understand what you just said. Can you repeat what you just said? Your analogy?
Yep. In Africa, there's a proverb. There's a proverb which says that when you are standing in a field of thorns, and you can't stand in those field of thorns while you are removing thorns from under your feet. First, you have to make sure that you leave that field of thorns and stand at a place where there is no thorns so that you can easily remove those thorns which are embedded under your feet. So if Belgium is saying it's fighting against crime, how can a country that is fighting against crime has a statue of somebody who killed 10 million Africans?
Right.
That means they are also supporting crime. That's what
right.
I mean.
I understand that Zaire was actually considered the personal property of the King of Belgium. It wasn't.
Yes.
So it didn't actually belong to the country of Belgium. It belonged to the king.
Yes.
So all the wealth came through him. As I said before, I think that the West has not really come to terms with colonialism. Your example of why not a statue of Hitler in Germany, it's obviously a ridiculous notion because he killed, not just Jews, but gypsies, so-called mentally retarded people, socialists, communists. He targeted many different groups, killed millions of people, apart from causing a war which caused a generation of young German men to be killed as soldiers, killed God knows how many Russians and people in every country in Europe. So obviously he's a massive criminal, but as you point out, so is King Leopold, and there's still a statue. In Canada recently, there was a famous French language filmmaker who until about a month ago, he had streets named after him and there were parks named after him. He was considered the founder of Quebec cinema. But it was discovered that he was a pedophile and had had relationships with boys, some of which were underage, throughout his life. And so almost immediately, his name was removed from everything. There was a prize for film in Canada. So we've become very sensitive to crimes against us, right? Those were crimes against Canadian boys. But if those crimes had been conducted in a third world country, I'm just not so sure we would have reacted so quickly.
Yeah, David, there's something which I know as a writer, when it comes to issues pertaining Africa, they always hide the fact, because crime against Africa, it doesn't matter to anyone, because, excuse me to say, Africans has no value. They are valueless. Okay. For example, in 2007, when I was in the house, when a group of Africans in Belgium here, in Antwerp, came to me, if I could help them. And what they told me is, a lot of Africans are dying at a hospital in Antwerp.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital name is Stavenberg Hospital. And David, it's not that they are telling me. I have already heard it.
Right.
But it wasn't my business to go and find out why Africans are dying in such large numbers. But when they forced me that I should go and find out, and in fact, I knew I have a press card in my hand from Belgium, which facilitated me and inspired me to do that.
Right.
I went and did the investigation. And believe me, they called me a lunatic for publishing that they were deliberately killing Africans because they were taking body parts for Belgians, which they desperately need them. But, David, after my book, no more African is dying there. So why are they dying? Now, excuse me to say, it's like I'm a hero here. I have saved their lives, but I'm nobody. Finished. No more.
So you're saying that the Stevenberg, I don't know how to pronounce this.
Yes.
Stevenberg, Steubenberg Hospital was bringing in Africans. Were they bringing in Africans from Africa to treat, or these were
people? No. There are so many. The African community in Belgium is very large.
Right.
And whenever they go to the hospital, even with leg injury, nobody comes out alive.
Mm.
So it came to a time everybody was scared to go to the Steubenberg Hospital. Because the rate of death, it was too high. And believe me, I witnessed also an Albanian gang demonstration, also demonstrating against the hospital for a lot of Albanians that died there, of which they also suspect something is going on. So when the African community contacted me to go and make investigation to find out, I said, yeah, there must be something wrong there. Because Albanians too witnessed their demonstration. So I went there to make the investigation. David, believe me, you can't believe how they treated me, but I was able to stand firm. I said, no, I will find out why our Africans are dying here.
And how do you know that their organs were being removed?
Thank you very much. It's a very good question, because the people were telling me that the rate they were dying, the high rate, they believe this is what is going on. Mm-hmm. I can say, believe me, no, for that is true. I can say that's what they are doing, but that's what the African community told me. So I went there and I told them that this is what they said you people are doing in this hospital. The woman told me that I might be crazy, because this hospital was established 100 years ago. If such a thing is going on, the Belgian government will have known to close down the hospital. I said, no, it is not true. I have been in Belgium for over more than 10 years, of which any bad thing which happens to an African is never published in the papers. You don't see it. So how can you tell me that if organs are being removed from Africans, Belgians will publish it? That's the question I asked the woman, and she couldn't answer me. So I said, well, then I believe you people are doing what this African community are suspecting.
Well, I would think that if an African person died in the hospital, at least sometimes the family would recover the body and bury it, and if there was a scar on the body indicating that an organ had been removed, people would notice that. I mean, was there any of that kind of evidence that you found?
No, dead bodies doesn't go to families. Here in Europe, there are funeral homes that prepare dead bodies and everything, and they put them in the coffin. So it's only the family that follows them for burial. But the family don't get in contact with the dead bodies to see if anything has been removed, David. So it can be possible. It can be possible. But the whole thing is, I can't even say it can be possible, because it's like I'm accusing them. But David, I have to tell you the truth, that ever since I made that investigation, okay, they sent a lot of police there to go and guide there. And I know the reason why they did that, because they thought the African community would be angry to go and maybe destroy some few things at the hospital, or maybe, I don't know. But police guided there for about 2 weeks. Then when they realized that nothing is going to happen, they left. But my happiness is, after the investigation, now the hospital, you don't hear of any African dying there. Everything is fine. That's my happiness. So even if they did it or they didn't do it, I have been able to do something.
Right. It's certainly plausible, because, you know, in China, there are persistent rumors, and it's impossible to know how true they are, about prisoners, you know, in many cases, prisoners of conscience, members of Falun Gong, things like that. There are many stories of them having their organs removed, and I think that until the Chinese government admitted that until recently they were taking organs from death penalty prisoners, and I believe that prisoners were sometimes executed because they needed a particular organ, so they would choose to execute somebody at a particular time. So it's certainly plausible, because the traffic in organs in order to keep rich people alive a little bit longer is very profitable.
That is exactly what the community thought it was happening in the hospital, because of the way their relatives were dying. And so it came to a time that if any African is sick and you mention Sagiban Hospital, it will tell you no way. So, but now, after my investigation, now people go there because they have changed completely. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why it changed. And I can't say really what they said was true or not. I can't say that. Well, but it has changed, please.
Yeah. What is the relationship between Belgium and Africa, especially Zaire these days? I mean, are there still many Belgian companies that have operations in Africa, like mining companies, things like that?
Yes, yes. Belgium is still, they still have many companies in Africa, especially in Congo.
And also I understand that Belgium is a big, I don't know if they're a big producer, but a big exporter of arms to the rest of the world.
Yes. Belgium is the leading country, the whole world, producer of the best quality beer and chocolate.
But what about arms, like guns and things like that? That's what was my question.
Yes, I heard about that too. They do.
I mean, it seemed ironic. Another irony is that European countries are heavily involved in the wars in America's wars in the Middle East, which are also partly European wars, and are blowing up a lot of places, killing a lot of people, and yet when the same thing happens on their territory, such as the terrorist attack in Belgium, they don't see any connections with what they've been doing for the past hundreds of years, and even quite recently. So that if Europe helps invade a Middle Eastern country, which activates angry young men who then decide to go kill people, there is a connection between these terrorist attacks in Europe and the wars of the West on the Middle East. But in Africa, there's less wars, although there are some, like the Central African Republic. But there's a lot more business, medical, mining, things like that.
Okay, for me, at the moment, I don't have anything to say anymore. But if you have anything to ask me, please, you can.
Yeah, well, we've come pretty much to the end of our time. Okay. So I would like to thank you for participating in this discussion. If you have any last comments you'd like to make, we can do that now.
I also have to give my greatest thanks. You deserve, because it's an opportunity for you to hear my opinion over the book Professor Johan van Doggen wrote, and I also quite agree with your opinion, and I'm going to also write on that, because I learn from everywhere. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Goodbye, Joel.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Before we close, a brief word on the Orlando massacre at the Pulse nightclub of 49 people. First, my sympathies to all victims of violence around the world, and especially the 30,000 or so killed in America by guns, whether by accident, suicide, murder, or other reasons. I don't know if we'll ever know whether the motivation of Mateen was homophobia, Islamic extremism, inability to accept his own sexuality, or, as one man claiming to be his lover stated, anger at all Puerto Ricans because he had discovered that one man from that colony was HIV positive. And as I've said before, HIV probably doesn't kill as a virus because it probably doesn't exist. It certainly hasn't been proven to exist, but fear of HIV is deadly. Recently, a woman ran over her boyfriend, well, former boyfriend, I guess, after she found out he was HIV positive. But I think the motivations were not as important as his methods. Even if homophobia and Islamic extremism were almost wiped out, which is impossible, although they can be reduced, there are many other reasons that motivate mass shooters. In Canada, one man shot up a class of engineering students and killed many because he was angry that many women were getting educated as engineers. Others have shot up schools, colleges, workplaces, army bases. Often their motivations are obscure, and since most mass shooters end up getting killed, we really never know for sure. Mateen's method, using a rapid-fire military-style semi-automatic weapon with a large magazine, is the problem. I don't know of any reason why a civilian would have one, and I'm not a big fan of the militaries of the world having them, since most wars are without proper justification. An event like Pulse Nightclub is a daily tragedy in places like Iraq, Libya, Syria, and Yemen, and a lot of Americans, like Hillary Clinton, want more of this, not less. Those who say that the Second Amendment makes gun restrictions impossible in the U.S. are wrong. Just this week, Governor Nixon of Missouri vetoed a bill that would have removed vetting of concealed carry permits in his state. And the Supreme Court ruled against a man found guilty of misdemeanor domestic abuse. They ruled that it's okay to forbid him to have a gun. There are many city and state restrictions on gun ownership that have survived court challenges. The Second Amendment actually says, in total, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The NRA doesn't like to cite the well-regulated part. But if fully automatic weapons and most other military weapons can be banned or heavily restricted, why not semi-automatics and guns with large magazines? The Second Amendment is an excuse, not a barrier, and it is, after all, just an amendment. So if Americans wanted to withdraw it, they could, as they had passed an amendment to abolish slavery and passed an amendment to both bring in and withdraw prohibition of alcohol. A recent paper in the Journal of the American Medical Association shows what happened in Australia after the Port Arthur massacre of 1996, at which 35 people were killed. By the end of 1997, these weapons of mass destruction had not just been banned from sale, but bought back from their owners and destroyed. Australia, which had close to one mass shooting, that's five or more deaths by their definition, per year up to 1996, has had none since then, although there have been two domestic violence situations that came close to that number. I'll include a link to this important paper. At least, please look at the graphs. The paper is freely available. Firearm suicides almost vanished and have stayed low. Other suicides dropped a lot after 1997, but started to rise again in the early 2000s and are now at about 1996 levels. Homicides are not much more than half what they were prior to 1996. Not surprisingly, firearm homicides have fallen dramatically. But even non-firearm homicides are declining, although as for the rise in suicides, there may well be other reasons for this. Great Britain had a similar experience with mass shootings after tightening up gun laws after a similar event at Dunblane in 1996, also in 1996, at which 16 children and one teacher died. The evidence is that firearm restrictions work. No offense to the LGBT community, but that is not the most important lesson of Pulse. Fighting homophobia will not stop more angry men with guns from killing a whole lot of people, but making it more difficult to get a powerful gun will. The argument is that they will get a gun anyway, but that's clearly not the case in the UK and Australia. As for people who say that Newtown, Dunblane, Pulse, or Port Arthur didn't happen, or it was perpetrated by the government to bring in gun control, I'm afraid that you're confusing innuendo and your own beliefs with reality. One of the things that is most disconcerting is the dogmatism I have experienced from gun proponents. For example, after the JAMA paper was published, they pointed out that both non-sexual and sexual assaults in Australia have climbed since 1996. But it is quite possible that this is due to other factors, just as there seems to be an upward trend in suicides in Australia, independent of the use of guns. And at least in these cases, by definition, nobody died, or it wouldn't be assault, it would be murder or manslaughter. The statistics that are cited are just from 1995, so they don't really go back far enough that one can say there was an uptick after 1996 when the first laws were brought in, or the end of 1997 after the gun buyback was completed. And nobody has said that even a complete ban on guns would eliminate murder or other violent crimes. But guns are a reason why the U.S. murder rate of 3.9 is more than double that of most economically developed European and Asian countries and Canada. Guns are now approaching vehicles as a cause of death, and while vehicle deaths have dropped significantly in the past decades in the United States and are still dropping, gun deaths are climbing. They may surpass vehicle deaths this year. Thank you for listening to episode 107 of The Infectious Myth. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com, like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth, or follow us on Twitter @infectiousmyth. Until next week, goodbye.